Well, the first wave of free agency is done. So that means it's time for a brand new episode of the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm your host, Kelsey Conway, and we just got finished a busy week of NFL news. The Bengals got busy on the first day addressing their biggest need, which was the offensive line. They signed guard Alex Kappa and guard slash center Ted Karras on the first day, showing Joe Burrow they're committed to making sure their offensive line is better. So there's, in my opinion, not a person who knows the offensive line prospects in the NFL and in the draft than our guest today. And for those who want to get some extra information and get ahead on who the Bengals could potentially be looking at in the draft and what he thinks of those two players that I told you that the Bengals added in free agency, it is Brandon Thorne, who covers the offensive line position specifically as a scout for Bleacher Report. And you can also find his work on Trench Warfare Newsletter. But if you have seen him on Twitter, he's a great follow. That's how I found him. He's at Brandon Thorne NFL on Twitter, and you're going to love this conversation that we had because he provides some great insight on the Bengals' new free agent signings, what he thinks about those younger players that the Bengals have already on the roster in Jackson Carmen, Trey Hill, and Smith. And then he also previews the draft and gives you a list of names of players he thinks could be fits and could be available when the Bengals are picking in the first and second round. So here's my conversation with Brandon. Well, the Bengals' first wave of free agency is just about over. It looks like they could make some moves here in the next couple of waves, but they made a big splash with signing two offensive linemen before re-signing BJ Hill. And they did that all on the first day of free agency, which got underway early this week. The new league year is already underway. And so we have a new episode of the Bengals Beat podcast. And I didn't think there was a better person to bring on for this week specifically than Brandon Thorne, who knows offensive linemen better than most people. If you're not following him on Twitter, you are certainly missing out. If you are into the X's and O's and want some really good insight, especially from an offensive lineman perspective, I would definitely check out Brandon. Brandon, thanks so much for joining me today, and happy St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a pleasure to be here, and happy St. Patrick's Day to you as well. I'm excited to talk.
So I tweeted last night that you were joining me, and we got plenty of questions from Bengals fans, and we'll get to their questions as this episode goes on. But let's just get right to it. Before we unload on everything about the Bengals offensive line, I want to know your perspective and if you've got a grade for how you think the Bengals did with that first wave of free agency in signing Alex Kappa, of course, and Ted Karras. Both are expected to be immediate starters in Cincinnati, of course. But what do you think of those signings? Can you talk to us a little bit about each one in particular? And just how do you think they're going to fit here in Cincinnati?
Yeah, I mean, I like what they've done. You know, I think they could have gone out and potentially signed one guy for the price of two, but they decided to go the other route and get two, you know, kind of almost for the price of one, maybe like a higher tier guy, like Brandon Scherff or something like that. So I like that approach, you know, because they need so much help on the line, especially on the interior. So, you know, especially going into a draft, adding two guys who could feasibly start for you. I mean, Kappa for sure and Karras probably. That just gives you such a good position. You know, you're in a position of strength entering the draft now. Mm-hmm. You're not boxed in and you have more options. So I do like the approach that they're taking so far. I mean, Alex Kappa will start there. I mean, I think he's a solid starter. Mm-hmm. Coming into the year, I ranked the top 75 offensive linemen in the NFL, top 15 at each position. And I had him as a top 12 right guard in the NFL. So, you know, that's right around kind of middle of the pack. Mm-hmm. And that's how I see him, which is a huge step up for the Bengals. So, you know, he's a guy that I really enjoy. He's from a Division II school. He's improved each year of his career. He's not like the most physically imposing or athletic guy, but he's very technically sound and he's very tough. He's played through a broken arm. I think he had another break somewhere in the past as well that he tried to play through. So he kind of brings, you know, kind of that tone setting presence to the line as well. And he's just kind of a reliable guy. He's still, I think, like 27 or so. So I really like that signing. And then Karras is, you know, older, a little bit more positional versatility. He's played guard and center throughout his career. I don't think he's quite as good as Kappa. He's more like, to me, a little bit below average. I know the grades, you know, say he was a little better last year, but the Patriots scheme, you have to keep in mind, they're pretty run heavy. Mm-hmm. And I think they ranked eighth in rush attempts last year.
Right.
So it's not like he's pass protecting very often. And then when he is, he gets a lot of protection with the scheme. So he's a better run blocker than pass blocker. He's a guy who could be at worst, a really high quality backup in case of an injury, or in case somebody like Jackson Carman doesn't straight up win the job, then Ten Karras can be that guy who you could go to. So, like I said, I just think it provides them options, and I do see why they're going this route, and I can get on board with it.
So there's a lot we can talk about with what you just said, but you brought up a point that I think is worth talking about, and that's the whole Jackson Carman dilemma. And I wrote a story on Cincinnati.com for our listeners to check out that basically breaks down the strategy of what the Bengals were trying to do in free agency. Their first two free agent signings being Kappa and Karras showed exactly what they were trying to do. So after the season, the storylines and the headlines were the Bengals have to fix their offensive line. Joe Burrow sacked 70 times in 20 games. They're going to get their quarterback killed. He's going to get hurt again. They got to fix it. Obviously, you saw their weakness against the Rams, but I mean, the Rams defensive line towards the end of the season, I don't care if you have three all pros, you know, on the offensive line, Aaron Donald's going to win one-on-one matchups more often than not. But when you really look at it, and I went through the games, I went through the statistics, the problems came on the interior offensive line. And when you're trying to go into free agency and draft, you have to have a plan. You can't just say, we're going to change this whole offensive line and get four new starters to play with Jonah and just expect that to all work itself out. You kind of had to pick a strategy. You were either going to go heavy and spend your money on tackles, or you were going to go towards the interior route and really shore up the guard and the center spot. And the Bengals, by these two signings, showed that basically Duke Tobin and Zach Taylor said, we're prioritizing strengthening center and guard, and then we'll get to a tackle. They probably think that they can get something out of Isaiah Prince if they can re-sign Riley Reiff on a team-friendly deal. It was clear that they said, we're going to spend our money on guard and center because we think that's where our issues were last year. And if we can improve that, we'll be that much better. Of all of the free agent signings out there, did you think that there was a better option for the Bengals? Or do you think, I know you referenced they were able to get two for maybe the price of one really expensive one. Did you think they maybe should have added someone else? I know Ryan Jensen was a player that they really liked. And obviously the Bucks re-signing him, I think, bummed a lot of teams out. But just from a standpoint of what they were able to get, knowing that was their biggest weakness, did you like those two options?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Kappa for sure. You know, I really like that one. And then, you know, Karras is more, like I said, I view him, I've always viewed him since he was on the Patriots originally, then the Dolphins and the Patriots, is kind of like a really high quality swing backup guy who could spot start for you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's maybe, you know, he got paid like that, maybe a little bit more. So, you know, I understand it, and you maybe could have gotten somebody else. I mean, I'm not too familiar with contracts and what every single offensive lineman in the free agency class has gotten in terms of money. But yeah, I mean, I'll just say I like the Kappa one more. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there's value that's easy to see with getting a guy like Karras. And I'm looking at kind of the list right now. You know, for right guard, I liked Austin Corbett quite a bit. Maybe just a hair more than Kappa, but nothing significant there. But aside from that one, I mean, Laken Tomlinson was another guy, you know, who was intriguing. I view them all in kind of the same tier though. Mm-hmm. Nothing significant that widens them. So yeah, I mean, not really. I feel like after Scherf, there was a whole thick tier of guards and mm-hmm. they just got one of those guys. So it was just pick your flavor at that point.
So let's talk about the Karras situation, because you saying you think he's, you know, probably a solid swing backup. That's probably not music to our listeners' ears, because they want Shorbet starters. But when you look at who the Bengals have on their roster, let's just like project this whole thing. Because in my opinion, we'll see how it goes, because it's all dependent on the draft. I think Karras is going to be their starting center, because I think Trey Hopkins is eventually going to get cut for a cap space casualty. They're able to get $6 million if they release him. He's also getting up there in age. He wasn't able to practice all 3 days of the week towards the end of the season. I just think that they need to get younger and more athletic at center. And I think Karras is better at center than their options like Trey Hill, who they drafted last year. I know that they're not going to give up on any of those young guys. They want to see them develop. But I think immediately Karras becomes your center unless they're able to draft a high quality player in the first or second round at center. So then you're leaving your left guard situation. Last year was Quentin Spain, and he was okay. I know you'll give me your thoughts on how he played last season, but he was a lot better than the right guard situation. The biggest issue was the right side, the right guard position in particular, and then obviously right tackle. But then, so you still have a question mark at left guard. You've got Jonah at left tackle. You still have a hole to fill at right tackle and left guard if Karras and Kappa slide in and are immediately the starters, which is, I think, the expectation. What do you think about how that's all looking right now? Where do you think the biggest upgrades still need to come? Or do you think you can kind of make it work with some of the guys that they have on their roster?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now you need a right tackle. That's the biggest need right now. I would pretty probably feel okay about going into the season with the other four positions, you know, with the guys on the roster and just, you know, letting them compete in camp and see who wins the jobs. And then you're going to be left with probably a couple good backups. So that's probably a pretty good spot. But right tackle, I think, you know, they definitely need a right tackle. I mean, Isaiah Prince is, you know, has some promise to him, but, you know, even though they were able to win games in the playoffs and things like that, I mean, you watch the tape against like Max Crosby. I mean, he did okay, but, you know, I thought Burrow got him out of a lot of, you know, reps where he lost. And then people said, you know, people, I mean, like fans, typically when they see line play, if it's not a sack or a direct pressure, they think the guy won the rep, but that's really not the case. A lot of the times when you have a quarterback who can make the offensive line right as much as Burrow can. And you just watch Prince last year. I think he's a little overwhelmed. He's not ready to start, I don't think. So you definitely need somebody, whether it's Reef. I mean, I think that they could definitely draft somebody who could probably start early. So, you know, I like that approach there of adding somebody else at right tackle for sure. And then as far as how the interior will shake out, you know, the Hopkins thing is interesting because, I mean, Hopkins has missed, like two or three games over the last 3 years. Even though he has been dinged up, he's right. managed to still be very durable. He's the same exact age as Ted Karras. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's, I don't know. I feel like that's a lateral move, if anything. You know, I don't really think that they improve there at center at all. But I do like the idea of having Karras there because he could play guard like Hopkins can. If you get rid of Hopkins, you basically are getting a similar level player. So I don't really see any upgrade there at all. But Hopkins wasn't the most of their problems anyway, in my opinion. It was the right side, like you said. So, yeah, that's how I see that working out. But I love the idea of getting somebody like that to come in. I mean, I would personally think that you would want to keep Hopkins there at center and then let Karras compete with Carmen at left guard and see who wins the job and then, you know, go that route. But
and then where does Quentin Spain? Do you keep Quentin?
Well, he's a free agent, right? Yeah.
Right. I mean, so you try and re-sign him or?
Not in that case, if you keep Hopkins, but if you get rid of Hopkins, then I would re-sign him and let him compete with Jackson Carmen for the left guard job. you know, either way. I mean, I would want to have either Karis or Spain competing with Carmen and seeing if Carmen can win the job.
So let's talk about Carmen since we're talking about him right now. I was not covering the Bengals yet when the Bengals drafted Carmen. When I got to this job and covering the Bengals every day, it was right when training camp started. And I remember getting the lowdown kind of from the rest of the reporters about Jaxon Carmen and basically that, you know, the Bengals drafted him in the second round and had high hopes that he was going to come in and be a starter right away. There were some issues with his weight. I think in his overall professionalism, I think that, you know, multiple times through talking to the coaches throughout training camp, they were just hoping anytime you'd ask, what does Jaxon Carmen need to do to get on the field more? The word came up, consistency. They needed to see more consistency from Jaxon Carmen. So what did you think about, did you think Jaxon Carmen was going to come in and be a starter right away? Or are you surprised that this is kind of how it's shaken out here? What are your thoughts on Jaxon Carmen and kind of what's unfolded since he left Clemson?
Yeah, I wouldn't say surprised. I had a third round grade on him, which for us is a high level backup / potential starter. So it was kind of up in the air if he was going to start as a rookie to me in terms of his projection from Clemson. You know, you have to just keep in mind, I think people do, is just that, you know, he's converting from left tackle. He did last year at least. So new position. And also he's 21 years old, or he was. So extremely young rookie, which is kind of a double-edged sword. You know, maybe there's some maturity things there as well, you know, that come with that sometimes. And then also it provides him such a long runway to improve. There's a lot of upside here and he has plenty of time. You know, he's not a 25-year-old rookie like some guys in this class and last class were, which obviously that shrinks the margin for error dramatically because, you know, at the end of their rookie deal, they're almost going to be 30. Carmen's going to be the age of those guys as a rookie. So he has a lot of time. And that's how I would kind of encourage everybody to view him, as a very young, talented kid who needs to not only, I don't know the off the field stuff as much as you guys who are around the team and things like that, but I do know him as a player pretty well. And I think technically is where he really needs to improve and get more consistent and things like that. And that was what I saw on tape. People can read my scouting report on Bleacher Report. I go in depth on all his strengths and weaknesses, but just a couple, you know, very erratic hand placement and strike timing. He tends to kind of throw haymakers at guys and he's just very aggressive and he needs to learn how to reel that in and be a little bit more selective. He kind of can play with some high pad level, which kind of takes away from his leverage and his power. But man, when it clicks for him and he plays with good leverage and all that, I mean, he's very powerful. He's athletic and he has things that you can't teach. So there's a lot of foundational traits there that I think are really nice to work with. But you just have to be patient, give him a couple years. And I love the idea of bringing in competition for him because you really want to push somebody like that and see, can you rise to the occasion? Can you mature? Can you get better? All this stuff. When you have somebody who could legit start, who's pushing you for the job, you're going to kind of see what he's really made of at that point. And I love that idea.
Well, and more often than not, you hear coaches say the biggest jump they see players taking in the NFL comes after their first season to their second season. So the Bengals are certainly hoping that happens for Carmen, because when you draft a guy in the second round, the expectation is he is going to be a starter and an impact player. So we'll see if Carmen is able to make that jump and fill a hole that the Bengals won't have to go out and either draft another person or spend more money in free agency, because they do have other needs that they could use that money for somewhere else. So let's talk a little bit about the right tackle position. We'll talk about the draft, but from a free agency standpoint, do you think that now that we're kind of past the first wave, these are now going to be more value type signings for teams? Do you think there's a right tackle out there that you think, philosophy wise and scheme fit wise, that could be a good addition for the Bengals? Or do you think at this point, maybe knowing what you know about the draft prospects, there might be someone better suited for this in the draft?
I mean, there's nobody in the free agent class that I think will come in and be like a above average starter or anything like that. I mean, tackles, that's just kind of the way it is. The demand always outweighs the supply for offensive tackle. It's just the way it goes. There's not a lot of those guys walking the earth. It's just, you know, the planet theory thing where there's just not a lot of big athletic guys who could play offensive tackle. There's never 32 good starting right tackles in the league at any point in the history of the league. And there never will be. So when you look at free agency, all these guys that are left right now are just guys who could potentially start, who could compete for a job and probably be a quality backup. There is, you know, and then you have to look at other variables as well. Like, I think the best guy right now is Trent Brown, who to me is one of the better right tackles in the league. But the major caveat there is his availability, right, and not being on the field. But so that has to come into play with the contract that you give him. I heard that the Seahawks are very interested in him and he may go there, but he would provide a dramatic upgrade over Isaiah Prince. It's just, you don't know how often he's going to be on the field. So that would be one guy I would throw out there who I would be interested in. And then, you know, there's a couple of veteran like guys like Riley Reiff who could come in and just be a stopgap guy who could be okay for you and, you know, just get you by. So that's pretty much how I see it. You know, aside from Trent Brown, it's a bunch of like Riley Reiff caliber guys who are middle of the pack to below average.
What do you think about Lyle Collins? There was a lot of chatter that, you know, he could potentially be traded, and would his familiarity with the offensive line coach Frank Pollock, do you see Lyle Collins being a fit for the Bengals, or do you think that it'd be more worth their time to re-sign a guy like Riley Reiff, who, you know, has already been here, or go after a Trent Brown?
Oh man. I mean, I think Lyle Collins is a great fit for the familiarity aspect with Coach Pollock, but also just because he's really good. I mean, you know, he's to me one of the 5-6 best right tackles in the league. So, yeah, I mean, anytime you can get a guy like that, plus the familiarities there, the scheme, you know, matches there. I mean, that to me is a no-brainer for the Bengals. I mean, it's just, you know, obviously it comes down to compensation, but right, in terms of fit, I think that's great. I love that idea.
Yeah, well, I think the fans would be really excited about that. Plus, it's another LSU guy. So there'll be a lot of LSU players on the Bengals. We'll see how that all shakes out. I'm honestly kind of shocked that no one has been able to acquire Collins. And I don't know if that's his doing because he wants to stay in Dallas or because, like you said, every team is looking to shore up their tackle position. It seems like almost every year. I was kind of surprised. And this is where, you know, you wish you could be a fly on the wall and be in the conversations when you hear what some of these teams and players are asking for. But I thought Morgan Moses was a player that could potentially be a good fit for the Bengals when I put together my list of players that I thought that they should and could target in free agency. And then of course he signs with the Ravens, who it just seems like they just every year just make great free agent signings. Were you surprised that Morgan Moses wasn't someone? And who knows, maybe the Bengals did try and go after him. They just set their price and they didn't want to go after it. But looking at what they did on day one, are you kind of surprised that they didn't address the tackle spot?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I'll be more surprised if they don't wind up getting Collins, you know, but yeah, just in general, I mean, I feel like, you know, he signed for $5 million per. I mean, gosh, if you're getting a guy who's, you know, I think definitely a solid starter at right tackle, I feel like $5 million a year is really cheap. And I'm not really sure why more teams weren't in on Moses at a higher price than that. He's been very consistent over his career. He doesn't really miss games. He is 31. He's played with a lot of injuries. I know that for a fact. So maybe there's some medical stuff on the horizon that could become an issue that we haven't really seen become as much of an issue yet. Sometimes teams get rid of a guy a year early rather than a year late because they see some things coming up, you know, that kind of may keep him off the field. That's the only thing that I could speculate on for why he didn't get more money. I agree. I think he's a solid starter, and, you know, the Ravens, I think, are probably going to be very happy with that deal in a couple of years, but we'll see.
Yeah. Well, I think what the Chiefs did with their offensive line after they lost the Bucks in the Super Bowl 2 years ago, I think that a lot of Bengals fans were hoping that the Bengals would just take the similar approach, right? Where the Chiefs went out and signed Orlando Brown. Yeah, they basically just redid their whole offensive line, but that's not really how the Bengals historically do things in terms of team building. They don't overspend just to fill needs. They're very, they try to be very cap smart with knowing, and also knowing that they're going to have to pay Joe Burrow next in the next couple of years. And it's, I mean, if you're looking at what quarterbacks are making, it's going to be a hefty price. Plus they also have players like T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd and Ja'Marr Chase. And it, you know, you have to be able to account for things like that. And those are all players that they want to make sure that they keep in place. And I think they're not, I wouldn't expect them to, you know, sell out to fix all four positions along the offensive line like the Chiefs did. But it is interesting to see what they do at tackle, because and how they fix that left guard spot. And then if they keep Hopkins, there's so many different things. But I wanted to ask you before we switch into our draft conversation about some other players that I know you studied that are on the Bengals roster. So that's another part of this. The Bengals, I know, are high on, from talking to some people within the organization, they are high on some of the younger guys. And I thought going into the season, and this was me just in my first couple of weeks of covering this team, they were very high on Deontay Smith. And then he got hurt. And I would have liked to see, if he was healthy, had he managed to bump into the starting lineup at some point this season, because, you know, you would talk to Brian Callahan and Zach Taylor and some of the other players, and they were really complimentary of the job Smith was doing in practice and in training camp. What do you think about Deontay Smith potentially? What do you think about his career here in Cincinnati? Do you think it is limited to a backup role? Do you think he could emerge as a starter? Let's talk about him and Trey Hill, two players who I know you've studied and can talk more about.
Yeah. Yeah. Deontay Smith, coming out of ECU, studied him and wrote a report. I actually compared him to Jamarco Jones, who's a guy, free agent guy who just signed. I can't remember where he signed, but from the Seahawks, Ohio State guy. Very similar players. So that's kind of how I see Deontay Smith. If people have any familiarity with Jamarco Jones, who's kind of a, you know, at this point in his career, he's like 4 or 5 years in at this point, and he's like a fringe starter, you know, who's a guy you want on your team, you know, but he's more so like a sixth, seventh guy. That's kind of how I saw Deontay Smith coming out. I mean, I had a fifth round grade on him. And you know, his strengths, the things that make him appealing, you know, and he showed these things at the Senior Bowl as well. Prototypical length, so very long arms, which is always helpful. It doesn't necessarily mean, you know, you're a very good pass protector or anything like that, but it does help. So he has that, you know, one of those unteachable traits. And I think he definitely has the foot quickness and the range to play tackle. In terms of getting to his set points and playing on an island, in terms of just having the athletic ability to do that. So that's kind of what you're working with there with Deontay Smith. And I think we saw a little bit of that, you know, reports of that when he showed up last year. So there's some intrigue there for sure. But I think that the concerns are, you know, like marginal play strength is how I would categorize it. Definitely needs time to get bigger and stronger. You know, he played around 275, 280 in college. He gained about 20 pounds for Mobile for the Senior Bowl and played, you know, practiced at that weight, which was nice. You know, I think he was 294. But he's going to have to prove that he can hold, you know, at least 295 pounds and maintain his athletic ability and also get stronger, I think, before he could become like a everyday starter. Mm-hmm. So that's just up in the air at this point. Right. But yeah, he was a developmental guy that I saw as a developmental prospect. And those are kind of guys that you like to get in your building, develop, you know, exposed to pro coaching, weight room, all that kind of stuff. And maybe in a couple of years you'll have something. And yeah, so that's how I see him. I wouldn't really count on him, in 2022 to start, but there's an outside shot and you definitely like having him, mm-hmm. I'll say that. So
could you tell the difference in the Bengals offensive line play with Frank Pollock here as offensive line coach this year as compared to years past?
Yeah, I definitely could. I mean, I feel like this year compared to, 2021 compared to 2020, it seemed like it was more so a personnel issue as opposed to a coaching issue. You know, I feel like guys at least were knowing where to go and what to do, who to identify, things like that. And they just didn't. It was more about, like the saying, like Jimmy and Joe's instead of X's and O's. I felt like that's what it was about this year, more so than 2020, where I thought it was both. There was a lot of issues in 2020 with just like the mental side of it. Guys just, busted plays and, stuff like that. So I didn't really see that, I feel like, in 2021. I mean, I feel like they got the most out of the players that
Right.
Pollock got the most out of the players that he was given, And that's as good as you can ask for as a coach. Now you just need to give him better players. And I think it'll be a lot better. So
at the combine, Frank Pollock was asked, what is he looking for in offensive linemen? And he used the term glass eaters, which has become a very popular term now for people describing offensive linemen. Would you categorize Ted Karras and Alex Kappa as glass eaters?
I think you could definitely Kappa and, Karras, I think you could too. I mean, these are guys who they get by like nuanced things, like playing with good leverage and taking good angles and being efficient in their movements and being very tough and smart, not big, athletic, powerful guys, but they're guys who win in all those other ways. And I think you could kind of put them in that category.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the draft now. If the Bengals are not going to go out in free agency and sign a tackle, which I would think is unlikely, I think it's coming. It's just going to be in the next couple of days. Draft. They're going to be drafting at pick number 31. So what's going to be there? It's really hard to predict because, as you and I both know, you have literally no idea what's going to happen on draft night. And, the first five picks in the draft, you can peg, what you think teams are going to do. Right now, you have no idea, who's even going to be available, because there could be some tackles that teams rate as their number one and other teams might have that tackle as a five, or not even just tackles, just players in particular. When you look at the crop of players, and I'm not just talking offensive linemen, it's really hard to do a mock draft until free agency is completely over, in my opinion, because if the Bengals sign like a Riley Reiff in free agency, do I think the need for a tackle is as great as it is, other positions in the first or second round? We'll see. But from an offensive line standpoint, since this is your niche and you can talk about this better than I think most people, who are some players that could be available late first round and second round for the Bengals?
Yeah. So I think there's a few tackles that probably like 90% or more will be off the board. Evan Neal, Ike Mukwonu, and probably Trevor Penning and Charles Cross. Like, it'd be kind of a shock if those guys are on the board there. The next guy on my list would be Bernard Raimann. So that's a guy I think that the Bengals will have a shot at drafting. And he's somebody who I'm actually pretty high on. I have him as the fourth best tackle in the class right now. He's a very intriguing player with an intriguing profile. So he's from Austria. He served in the military in Austria, came over as a tight end at Central Michigan and converted to the offensive line in 2020. So he's literally only played 18 games of offensive line in his life. And he is already at a point where he's grasped the position, like the technical things, really quickly. And that to me is like just signals this guy's arrow is pointed up. The kind of dichotomy there is that he's 25 years old. He's going to be a 25-year-old rookie. So he's very old, but at the same time, he's very young in terms of, as a football player.
Right.
So even though he'll be an older rookie, I think he could still get better, because he's just so new to the position and he doesn't have a lot of bad habits or anything like that. And then on top of all that, he's very athletic. I love his body control and his weight distribution, balance, things like that. He has a lot of really intriguing traits, really fascinating background. And I think his value is ideal at the end of the first round or beginning of the second. So, yeah, I mean, that's a guy who to me makes a lot of sense. He's played left tackle at Central Michigan, but you know, he could also, I'm sure, play right if, you know, that's what they want to do and compete with a guy like Isaiah Prince. You know, that would be great, I think. So he's the first guy that comes to mind. The next guy would be Daniel Falele from Minnesota. So this guy, I mean, he's 6'8", 385. So an absolutely enormous dude. I think he would be the biggest offensive lineman in the NFL from day one. And I mean, the thing about him that makes him, it's crazy. He's from Australia. He's a very smooth mover, surprisingly, at 385. And he's a very good run blocker as well. So he's very well coached at Minnesota. He's pretty experienced as well. He has 31 starts at right tackle. But I have a second round grade on him. I think it's not crazy to say he could go at 30, but I think ideally he's somebody you get in the second round. So those would be the two tackles that I would say, you know, right off the bat to me just could be there and also make sense for the Bengals, you know, a tackle. So yeah, Raymond and Falele.
I would be very interested to see if they're both of those players that you just named, and I have not even gotten started on my draft prep. So I'm really glad you gave me and the rest of the listeners those names, because now I'm going to go and study those guys even more in depth. But because they're not coming from like proven programs, if that if that makes the Bengals be hesitant, because like they need to get, like if the fact that they drafted Jackson Carman where they did and him not being a starter right now isn't a good look. And I'm wondering if, because they are, and it's too early to determine what Jackson Carman is going to be. I want to put that out there for anyone listening, because we're not trying to make statements here that Jackson Carman can't play in the NFL. But I'm wondering if the Bengals are going to approach their need for the offensive line in the filter of, we got to nail this one because we didn't nail it with Jackson Carman in the way that maybe we had hoped. I'm just wondering, just based off of the amount of games that you said one of the guys played, and the fact that, I mean, Minnesota is an established program, but if they would want someone who, you know, was like an Alabama or an SEC guy where they can, you know, go to that coach and have seen X amount of snaps and at least know, hey, this is what we're for sure getting out of this guy.
Yeah. I mean, ideally that's what you want, you know, right. But at the end of the first round of pick 30, it's just not realistic. You know, I mean, Ryan Ramczyk is the last guy that I thought went there who, you know, he got picked at pick 32, I want to say, and became an all pro, but that's kind of an anomaly. I mean, you know, the best tackles in the draft are going to get drafted early. The most sure things are going to be gone, you know? So yeah, I mean, at this, you know, at pick 30, when you have a great season and you're, you know, almost winning the Super Bowl, you're going to just have to, you know, likely settle on one of these kind of guys. There isn't no LSU SEC star tackle available. And you know, they are, it's Evan Neal. He's probably going to go number one overall, or in the top five. So, you know, it just is what it is kind of thing. You know, there's just not one of those guys. If you want to go guard, you know, I think maybe you might have a chance there, you know, with like a guy like Kenyon Green or Zion Johnson. Mm-hmm. You know, those are two guys I really like Zion. He's been my guy since December. But yeah, I mean, Boston College and Texas A&M, if you want to go there, you know, but it's always easier to get guards and tackles. So yeah, but if you want to hit like a, you know, SEC star tackle, I just don't think there is one in this draft that will be available at those points. So.
What about center? Do you think there is a chance Tyler Linderbaum is there for the Bengals at the end of the first round?
You know, I mean, you asked me a couple months ago and I probably say no, but after the combine and Linderbaum measuring in with 31 1/8 inch arms, mm-hmm. And you know, not testing because of the foot sprain, and he's going to have his pro day here soon, and we'll see what happens there. But I think that it's feasible now that he could potentially be there. I wouldn't bet on it, but I wouldn't say it's crazy either. And it's purely based off of size, and he is a center only. So he's not a center guard, you know, he's a center only guy. So no positional versatility. I don't really think there's a whole lot of scheme versatility there either, but he's a better fit in zone, which is what the Bengals like to run, you know, inside, outside zone, wide zone. So, you know, he fits scheme wise. And I think it's possible, you know, I mean, I really like Linderbaum still, but you know, I see his value being like middle of the first round. That's my ideal place for him. So anytime you have a middle of the first round guy, he could slip a little bit or he could go a little higher. So I think it's possible. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't rule it out.
What about if Linderbaum is gone? Who are some, we've talked about tackles and guards. So who are some centers you think could be available if the Bengals choose to go the center route? And if that player is their highest ranked player on their board at the time their pick comes around?
Yeah, I don't think there's anybody worthy of picking at pick, you know, at the end of the first round in this class. There's guards, but I don't know about center. I think it's Linderbaum. Second round, you know, I think you could potentially look at a guy like Dylan Parham from Memphis, mm-hmm. who I like a lot. He started over 50 games, and he was really good at the Senior Bowl. He's actually played guard in college, and he hasn't really played center, but he took snaps in Mobile and was really good. And I think he has the traits and the kind of the profile to make that successful transition. I have him with like a high third round grade, but I could see the NFL valuing him, you know, late second. So Dylan Parham would be one guy. Luke Fortner from Kentucky is another guy. And maybe Luke Gudecki from Central Michigan is another guy. Those are all like, to me, more third round guys, but you know, those guys could get, you know, picked at the end of the second. So those are potential fits as well. It's just, I don't know how much those guys would move the needle right away compared to Karras and Hopkins. But if you're looking at center, those would probably be my next top guys. And there's another guy named Cam Jurgens from Nebraska who I view late, like third round, but he's very intriguing and he could go higher as well. So that's like four names for you right there.
So if you're Duke Tobin and you're making the pick on draft night, of the players that you just named at all those positions, if you mm-hmm. could make the selection for the Bengals and you wanted to take an offensive lineman at their pick, who would you pick of all those players?
I mean, it'd probably be Tyler Linderbaum or Zion Johnson. So depending on which one are on the board, and those are both interior guys, not tackles. I just have Zion and Tyler Linderbaum graded higher than Bernard Raimann. Even though Raymond's my fourth tackle, I have Zion Johnson as the best guard in the draft. So if you could get the best guard in the draft or the fourth rated tackle, I would lean the best guard in the draft because he's just more of a sure thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be a dream pick because he's a left guard. Yeah. You could just put him at left guard and then you could, you know, cut somebody or do, you know, you have so many more options at that point. But yeah, I think the dream pick would be Zion Johnson.
That's what makes the draft such a interesting puzzle to try and figure out, right? Because oftentimes free agency sets the tone for the draft and the draft sets the tone for your free agency plan. They work hand in hand because these guys, these draft scouts, and you in particular, I mean, how long have you been working on your grades for these offensive linemen? Since the fall?
Yep. Yeah.
So September. The scouts and the Bengals have a very small scouting staff, but they do a really good job of thinking ahead and giving Duke Tobin and Zach Taylor this information ahead of free agency where it says, look, we really need to go after a center and a guard here because we can get a tackle in the draft because here are X, X, and X players, and this is how we have them graded. So it's going to be really interesting to see what the Bengals do because they've kind of shown their hand through free agency. So what does the Bengals free agency signing so far tell you about what you think they're going to do in the draft?
I mean, the thing is, it creates more uncertainty, which for us may not be a good thing, but for them, I think it's a very good thing. You know, you want to have that situation as an NFL team where people don't know what you're going to do because you don't have glaring holes.
Right.
Right. I mean, they may have that still at right tackle, but we'll see how free agency, you know, finishes up and things like that. But yeah, I mean, I would expect them to definitely address offensive line within the first three rounds, at least once. You know, what round it happens in, it's so much is contingent on how the board falls, if they sign anybody else, you know, things like that. But I think the names that we've talked about are, I think there's a pretty high likelihood if they are going to draft, you know, offensive line in the first three rounds, I think one of those guys has a pretty high chance of being one of those selections.
What do you mean? It creates uncertainty and that's not good for us. It gives us more to talk about on podcasts like this. We can play the what if game for the next, I don't know, 6 weeks, which,
right.
You know, I don't know if you get to the point in draft weekend where you're like, all right, I'm ready to start looking at some new players and have some new conversations, but it is.
Yeah, I am.
It's so fun. And you do a great job breaking it all down. So before I let you go though, I wanted to ask you a question. When you look at, and even though it's only been two players and you obviously know what the Bengals have on their roster, when we talked about guys like Deontay Smith, Jackson Carman and Trey Hill, what would you give the Bengals first wave of free agency signings if you could give them a grade?
I would say a B, maybe a B plus.
B pluses are good.
Yeah, I think it's solid. You know, I mean, yeah, probably a B plus because it's a little above average. I mean, I feel like you had to address the offensive line and to do it with two capable starters, you know, cap a little bit more than that, like I said, I think that's great. I mean, I think you raised the floor of the offensive line in 2022. And you're going to be better than 2021 based on what you did in free agency, assuming you address right tackle still. But even if they didn't, I still think that they're going to be better than last year. So, hey, I mean, this early in the process to be at that point, I think that's a win.
That's music to Bengals fans' ears right now. Yeah. It's going to be a wild next couple of weeks. We'll see kind of how things shake out from you know, I think there might be a couple surprise signings here left this weekend. Throughout, you know, the weekend, are you anticipating anything crazy to kind of happen from a team standpoint of these guys are, you can't believe some of these offensive linemen are still available?
I mean, I can't believe Teron Armstead is still available.
Well, I think he's waiting on Deshaun Watson.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So that one to me, even though we kind of know that that's the case, the fact that he's still unsigned though, and a team hasn't blown him away with an offer is kind of surprising to me, but I kind of understand it at the same time because of his injury history. But I really believe he's one of the three or four best left tackles in the league. So yeah, I mean, those guys just don't hit the market very often. So that's one, but you know, I'm still waiting to see what happens with Lael Collins. Yeah. I mean, we touched on it, but that's the one I want to see because I feel like the Bengals are the ideal spot for him. So there's other teams that definitely need him, but I don't know that others make as much sense as the Bengals. So I really want to see if they're going to wind up, you know, making a serious offer for him and if they can get him.
We'll be following that one extremely close. I think, would you move the free agency grade to an A if they get Collins in a trade?
Oh yeah, absolutely. For sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, Brandon, thank you so much for your time. This is great information. I know me as I'm just started with my draft work for the Bengals. I'm definitely going to look up all of those names. It's great information. You do such a great job. And for Bengals listeners who are draft Knicks and into the draft, just like we are, be sure to follow Brandon because he just gave you the lowdown on the Bengals, but he can give you even more information on all of the draft prospects. He's a great follow. I love following him on Twitter. And I know a lot of people that I talk to, so there's you know, might not be a better follow if you care about the offensive line and the draft than Brandon. And you can follow all of his work on the Trench Warfare newsletter, but all of his work is also on Bleacher Report and on Twitter. He's at Brandon Thorne NFL. So make sure you give him a follow. We really appreciate you stopping by the Bengals Beat podcast. And hopefully if you're not too busy and sick of talking about these offensive line draft prospects, maybe we could get you on if the Bengals are able to draft a few offensive linemen to get your thoughts post-draft.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just let me know. I appreciate you guys having me. And it's a pleasure to, you know, have people that want to talk about offensive line with. So yeah, thank you.
Let me tell you about the new sports app we've launched as part of our USA Today family. USA Today Sports Plus is the new sports app that puts the fans first. Get the latest scores, stats, and standings, and enjoy interactive experiences with our award-winning sports writers. Download USA Today Sports Plus from the Apple or Google Play stores today. USA Today Sports Plus, fan harder. Well, that was just a fantastic conversation with Brandon. I learned so much just in the brief time of talking to him, and makes me excited to kind of start looking at some of these draft prospects. But before we start looking at that, I think we're going to wait a couple of days to see what the second wave of free agency brings. I don't think the Bengals are done adding players. I think they're going to add one or two more players over the weekend and through early next week. I think they're still due to add a cornerback, and we'll see if they add a tackle. We'll see if all the rumors about the Bengals being interested in Lyle Collins comes to fruition and they make that trade, or if they re-sign a player like Riley Reiff, or as Brandon said, is Trent Brown an option here? We will see, but appreciate everyone tuning in to this episode of the Bengals Beat podcast. As always, we will be back next week, continuing throughout the offseason to bring you the latest on this Bengals team, what they're trying to do this offseason. So thanks for tuning in this week.